This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried is hit with another criminal charge, and a judge rules that former Vice President Mike Pence must testify in the January 6th probe. Plus, U.S. companies haven't been hit hard yet by rising interest rates, but that could change this year, and it could have consequences for consumers.
Well, to the extent that companies have higher costs because of higher interest rate expenses, they're going to try and pass it on. And passing it on, that comes out in inflation. Probably the more important way that it affects consumers is it's going to affect the job market.
It's Tuesday, March 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Let's start with the latest criminal charge against FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried. An indictment unveiled today alleges that in 2021, he authorized bribing one or more Chinese government officials with at least $40 million in cryptocurrency in an attempt to regain access to accounts that the country's law enforcement had frozen as part of a continuing investigation. According to the indictment, the accounts held more than $1 billion with two of China's largest cryptocurrency exchanges and were tied to Bankman-Fried's crypto investment firm Alameda Research. A spokesman for Bankman-Fried declined to comment. Alibaba, the Chinese e-commerce giant, says it plans to split into six independently run companies, and each of those could seek their own IPO. That would effectively dismantle the business empire built by entrepreneur Jack Ma over two decades. The reorganization comes after Chinese authorities signaled in recent months that they were slowing their regulatory clampdown on the country's tech sector. Alibaba was once valued at over $800 billion, but is now worth about a quarter of that. Turning to U.S. news, a judge has ruled that former Vice President Mike Pence must testify before a grand jury about conversations he had with former President Donald Trump before January 6, 2021. That's according to people familiar with the ruling, who said the judge rejected executive privilege claims by Trump. A spokesman for the Justice Department declined to comment. And an update in a case that drew national attention on the hit podcast Serial. A Maryland appellate court has reinstated Adnan Syed's murder conviction, less than a year after a Baltimore circuit judge vacated his conviction in the 1999 death of Haman Lee. The court said the lower court judge had violated the rights of the victim's family to attend a hearing in person and ordered a new hearing in the case. The United States has informed Russia it will no longer exchange data on its strategic nuclear forces. That's according to U.S. officials, and it's in response to Moscow's decision last month to suspend its participation in the New START treaty that cuts long-range arms. A senior Biden administration official said the move is aimed at encouraging Russia to return to compliance with the treaty. The Russian embassy had no immediate comment. In Mexico, at least 39 migrants were killed and more than two dozen others were seriously injured in a fire at a migrant detention facility in the border town of Ciudad Juarez. Mexico's president said the fire was started by occupants of the facility in protest of their impending deportation. Wall Street Journal deputy editor Santiago Perez reports from Mexico City.
Mexico runs the world's second largest network of detention facilities, only after the U.S., so we're talking about a network of 50 detention centers. And the government last year detained almost 500,000 migrants in Mexico, the Mexican government. So that was a record. The problem is that many of these facilities don't really have the resources to provide proper attention, medical care, or even have a proper fire code.
Mexico's Interior Ministry said it requested an investigation into the cause of the fire. And rising interest rates and remote work are starting to hit commercial real estate in the U.S. One of the most noticeable impacts is that defaults and vacancies are now rising. According to Moody's Analytics, the amount of leased Class A office space in central business districts fell in the fourth quarter of last year, for the first time since 2021. When we say Class A office space, typically that means high-end office buildings with modern amenities. Our real estate reporter Conrad Poutier says the trend could have ripple effects.
Part of the challenge here is that commercial real estate is so closely entangled with finance, and particularly regional and community banks. So regional and community banks hold a big share of commercial mortgages, so mortgages backed by office buildings or rental apartment buildings or hotels. And these banks, as we all know, are already under pressure right now, right? Because of Silicon Valley Bank's failure and the fear that this could sort of spiral into a banking crisis. So add on top of that the fact that they own a lot of commercial mortgages and that there is at least some uncertainty over how many of these loans are actually going to default, what these loans are actually worth, and that could add more issues.
Meanwhile, U.S. home prices fell again in January for the seventh straight month. It's the longest streak of declines in more than a decade. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index fell 0.2% from December to January. Mortgage rates rose to about 7% in the fall and have been fluctuating so far this year. Prices are declining fastest in Western markets. And if you're thinking of buying a house, our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing, is launching a home buying series starting this Friday. Our reporters, real estate experts, and people who have recently bought or sold a home will break down what can be a complicated process. They'll also have tips and tricks to help you on your home buying journey. Coming up, higher rates have yet to hit U.S. companies, but that's about to change. More after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Most Americans know that the cost of borrowing is up, a product of the Federal Reserve's ongoing efforts to tame inflation by raising interest rates. But perhaps surprisingly, those higher costs have yet to hit corporate borrowers in a big way. Our Heard on the Street columnist Justin Lehart wrote about why not and why it's about to change, and he is here now to explain. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
So let's start off with the first why. Why aren't higher rates hitting corporate borrowers yet? What's different about this sector of the economy?
Yeah, so one of the things that happened during the pandemic is rates went extremely low, as a lot of people remember. And corporations did what a lot of American homeowners did. They refinanced. They issued debt at those extremely low rates. They extended their maturity. So basically, they issued debt that they didn't have to pay back for a while. And that gave them some breathing room as rates began to climb. So rates have climbed for a while now, but it's probably not hitting them very hard yet because they issued so much debt before.
And we'll get into why that's about to change. But I'm curious, is this the way that this has typically played out in the past during previous periods of sustained interest rate increases?
We haven't had a sustained period of rate increases quite like this in a very, very long time. So we'd have to sort of go back into the history books, and it would be almost a completely different, you know, financial system. This long decline in interest rates, it started around 1980. And by 2021, the interest rates that companies were paying looked to be about as low as they were since the 1950s. Since then, we've seen rates go up a lot, and now we're going to see how long this catch-up period is going to take.
Okay, so let's talk about the expectation, which, as you write, is that higher costs of borrowing are now set to hit companies this year. So why now? Tell us about some of the major factors there.
Well, companies issued a ton of debt in 2020, and some of that debt is coming due now. Some of it was three-year debt. So if you issued a three-year corporate bond in 2020, it's coming due now. So you're going to have to refinance that debt at a higher rate. It's not going to be as big a deal like right now as it will be later this year, next year. And then there's a really big debt overhang that occurs around 2025.
So Justin, when that does hit, how extensive is it likely to be? Do we have a sense of that?
Yeah, so S&P Global Ratings analysts recently calculated there's a manageable seeming $504 billion in U.S. non-financial corporate debt that's maturing this year. And then in 2024, that jumps to $710 billion and $862 billion in 2025, $880 billion in 2026. So it's going to be sort of a ballooning problem, right? It's going to start pretty soon, though. Financial data firm CalcBench took a look at 75 non-financial firms, and they looked at the weighted average interest rate on the debt that's maturing this year. It's 2.65%. I mean, that is extremely low. So if those companies decide to refinance their debt, re-up their debt, they're not going to get that lower rate. It's going to be higher, right? Even the overnight rate that the Federal Reserve sets is higher than that right now, just to give a sense of how big the jump is going to be, right? These companies have a lot of other debt that's maturing later, right? But this is where we start to see it.
So those are some big numbers you listed. And taking that into account, what will investors be looking for? What should they be looking for?
Well, some companies have a choice when it comes to re-upping their debt, right? They can do it, you know, or in some cases, they may say, well, look, we're not going to issue as much debt. What that also is tantamount to meaning is, well, we're not going to invest as much as we would have otherwise, or we're going to have to raise money someplace else. And the someplace else for investors is the stock market. That creates share dilution. That's not something that stock investors like very much.
What do we know about how all this is going to affect consumers, those who do business with these companies?
Well, to the extent that companies have higher costs because of higher interest rate expenses, they're going to try and pass it on. And passing it on, that comes out in inflation, or I suppose it could be in worse service, right? Things like that. Probably the more important way that it affects consumers is it's going to affect the job market, right? If companies have to reduce investment, that means reduce investment, reduce expansion, that weighs on job creation down the line.
I've been speaking with our Heard on the Street columnist, Justin Lehart. Justin, thank you as always.
Thanks so much.
And finally, voice chat has been popular among gamers, allowing them to strategize and socialize while playing. But according to a recent study, nearly three quarters of players using voice chat have experienced incidents like name-calling, bullying, and even threats. So game developers are now paying for sophisticated software to monitor those spaces. In some cases, these artificial chatbots have the permission to mute unruly players in real time or even ban them. Wall Street Journal tech reporter Sarah Needleman says the AI software can tell the difference between playful and hostile speech.
That's really the magic behind this tech. It is able to understand sentiment and the difference between someone joking and being serious. As we know in games, it's very common for people to say, I'm gonna kill you, because they are literally trying to kill the other person's character with a virtual gun. And trash talking is very common, but this technology stands out from what we've seen in the past is that it can understand the difference between joking and serious commentary that poses a potential threat of danger to another player. And that's pretty novel.
Sarah also says providers of this kind of technology have to straddle a fine line between keeping players safe and respecting their privacy. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.